Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Thursday afternoon. Don't forget, join Cure for our friends for their annual charity golf tournament that benefits cystic fibrosis families. That'll be Saturday, September 26th at 12 Stones Golf Course. First 15 teams to register. Two responders play free per team for 7 a.m. shotgun start. This golf tournament is their biggest event of the year. They are offering a 1 o'clock tee time, snacks and beverages on the course, and a catered dinner by Courtney's of Mount Juliet. For more information, go to thegamenashville.com and click on the events tab. Tonight, starting at 6, Chase.
Yeah, I got a little special coming at you. Looking forward to this. Sports betting is very, very close here in our state. Going to be happening at some point in October before November 1st. So we got a little time after Jared and the GM before we get game 6 between Tampa and the Islanders underway. So I'm going to come at you with some sports betting, do a little education, talk about some of the games this weekend in football. So looking forward to that 6 to 6:30 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Just yourself, and you're going to be, well, you can be giving out free picks.
Me, myself, and I might have some free picks for you.
Huh.
Just throw those out there.
Are those worthy picks, or are those like gifts to the people, which were just big bags of dog poo?
I've learned what not to do from gifts to the people. Sorry, Plaz, but so no, they will not be gifts to the people. I'm gonna make sure that I can make you a winner. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, whenever the segment turns into just do the opposite of what George picks, that's never a good segment.
Never.
Just take the opposite. That's the gift to the people.
My gift.
That's
to
what
the
that's
people.
What it turned into.
Willie, Darren.
So you're going to educate us, huh? Are you going to talk about the Sharks? The shark money.
The shark money. Yes, I am.
Is that part of the education?
That is the difference between a shark and sharp.
Yes, the difference between shark money and sharp money.
Yes.
Well, Willie, you should check that hour out, then, or that 30 minutes out, then.
It'll be good. It'll be educational.
Sounds like
it'll
be very educational. What about DJ Chark? Is he in there?
Well done. Well done, Willie. That's good.
Do we have Elliot? What's going on?
We don't. We don't.
What's happening?
I don't know. I don't.
Is something breaking?
I don't know. We're efforting. It's never good when we say we're efforting. This has been a loaded show.
Yeah, it's been a good show. Good show. I did see a couple things floating out there in the hockey world that Toronto, I guess, has told Bruce Boudreau that thanks but no thanks.
Also, Eric Staal.
Toronto said that. Yeah, Staal to Buffalo.
Really?
And, yeah, Staal to Buffalo.
Marcus Johansson or Johansson, depending on whether you're in Sweden or USA.
Is it? I think he's
depends on what team he's been on.
He's
when he was
Johansson,
with Washington,
right?
He was Johansson.
Johansson,
and
right.
Then when he got traded to the Sabres, it went back to Johansson, I think, or Johansson.
That's. And I guess what's being thrown out there, and this is Elliot has put it out there in 31 Thoughts, is Dumba next to get traded?
That's a heavy rumor. They just simply don't. They have some salary cap issues. They knew they were going to have, especially after signing Brodin in Minnesota, and this is a team to keep your eye on because they are in the Central. Bill Guerin has had to rework. He's got his plan, and he's one at a time. But it sounds like he's chosen to sign Brodin rather than Dumba. I'm not sure there was enough money to sign both without making some more. Because remember, there's Kevin Fiala, and he's going to have to sign him long-term, you would think. You would want to sign him if he continues to play anything close to what he's been playing.
Yep. The question is, what's he going to get? That's what I would like to know.
He's a good, solid defenseman, I think. I mean, he is rock solid, but...
No, I meant Fiala. What is he going to get?
Fiala's an interesting one because he is still restricted, right? He can't go to the open market yet. But that's, that's a great question. It's a great question. How high do you go?
Do you think it's a bridge deal?
Could be. Would you go bridge? I think I'd go bridge.
I'd go bridge.
I still want to see it for a little longer.
Yep.
You saw some good, more good than maybe you ever have seen with him, but it's still, there are times it still flashes. You got to see consistency before I'm willing to pony up.
But this was long this term. Was domination.
This was the best.
This was his best.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure.
For sure.
When they made the coaching change, I mean, you really saw a difference. But can you get that consistently? That's why if I'm the team, I go more bridge deal. Now, if you're him, you're going to try and capitalize and get as much as you can. But and the whole scenario changes with everything going on in our world right now. I mean, the cap is what the cap is, and it's going to be that way. You know, if you're Kevin Fiala, you know, do you just jump on the best fair offer that you could do or that you can get? And or do you fight it to the bitter end to see what you can get?
And remember the market. The market is not what it was last year or the year before. So you have to be careful not to overstep your leverage, even though he's
still very young.
He's an extremely important player for them. He changed their season. When he started playing at that level, they went from, you know, a fringe team that was probably not going to make it, that actually traded off pieces thinking they weren't going to make it, to, man, this guy could get us in the playoffs.
Yep. Did you guys see who the Blues hired as an assistant coach?
Educate us. I did not.
Jim Montgomery. So he's back.
Wow.
Really?
Oh.
Okay. I was wondering if he was gonna if it was gonna be this season, or if he'd still have to sit out a little longer. But I kind of figured, you know, there could be a chance that somebody takes a chance on him to bring him back.
He's gonna stay in the Predators division.
I don't think that's a bad move for them.
Well, from a personal standpoint, you got to give him credit for recovering to earn another opportunity, because he sort of shot himself in the foot. Right, he was going through some stuff on a personal level, needed to get some help. He's done it. And so now he's got a job again.
Yep. And speaking of the Blues, Bill Armstrong is now the new Arizona GM. So a lot of shuffling going on.
Yep.
Shuffling around.
No relation to Doug Armstrong. He's been there for a few years as the assistant GM.
All right. I think we have made contact with Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet. 31 Thoughts. Elliot, what's going on?
Sorry, I was a bit late, guys. I was on a call and I couldn't get off.
Well, we just were waiting for the breaking news. We figured, well, something big
what the Predators
is about to happen. Yeah, did they get Dustin Byfuglien? What's going on?
What, you guys think that's happening? Is there any
No. I just made that up.
It's a good rumor, though.
Something to get people's attention.
Yes.
Yes. Let's...
No, nothing... Nothing huge at this time, though. You know, guys tell me there's a lot of talk. And we'll see what happens in Arizona now that there's a new GM.
Yeah, okay, let's just start there. So Bill Armstrong is the new GM. So
yeah.
What do you think that's going to mean for some of the things we've talked about with you in the past about that roster?
Well, I think the moves will probably start beginning. He's not officially doing his introductory media conference in Arizona until next week, but that doesn't necessarily stop him from doing anything. Steve Sullivan, who you guys know very well, and was holding the job on an interim role, he was doing a lot of research. He was making a lot of calls. He was talking to a lot of people. There's probably I don't know if they put them in binders anymore or it's all online, but there's probably a large file somewhere, either on the internets or in an actual binder, with how valued the Arizona players are and what people are willing to offer. And I think some of these players, I think Kemper's had some action. I think Ekman-Larsson's had some action. I think Hjalmarsson's had some action. I think Derek Stepan, a center who has already been paid his bonus and is due $2 million salary for the rest of the year, I think he's had some action. I think that he's going to have some opportunity to do some things. I think the Coyotes want to cut payroll. I think they want to add some picks and prospects. And that's what he knows best. He's a draft guy. At least that was his most recent responsibility. So I think he's going to be busy.
I was reading in your 31 Thoughts, did you have Peter Laviolette on recently on the podcast?
Yeah, it's coming out today.
It's
coming out today. And, you know, it's funny. Like, you guys know Laviolette. He doesn't show us his giddy fun side. And, you know, there were a couple of times that he kind of laughed at some questions and gave us some interesting, funny answers. But generally, you guys know him. When it comes to coaching, he's a serious guy. He pushes. He tries to push the right way, but he pushes. He's demanding. And, you know, the interesting thing I thought from him was he said, look, I'm not coming to a team that needs to be rebuilt. I'm coming to a team where I have to take them up one more rung on a ladder. And, you know, I don't know if he's ever come into a situation. Like, when he went to Nashville, you guys were ready to win, right? Like, you were at a level, and he wanted, and the goal for him was to get you up to a higher level, which he almost did. Washington, they're at a high level. I think they've lost it. One player told me when they showed back up for training camp in July, they could tell it just wasn't the same. And that's his goal, to get them back to where they were 2 years ago. It's probably the best situation he's ever entered.
Oh, I don't think there's any of that. Yeah, the Predators were not even a playoff team when he got here. And then he was. They were in the playoffs every year he was here. I mean, the Capitals, even their failures the last couple of years, they've been in the playoffs and then, of course, have won the Cup. So I definitely think this is the best scenario he's ever walked into, for sure.
Yes. I agree with you on that. And, you know, I know he had a conversation with Ovechkin yesterday morning because he told us before we did the interview yesterday afternoon, he told us he had a 30-minute conversation with Ovechkin in the morning. And, you know, the one thing about Ovi, like one story I heard that's interesting about him is that, you know, a few years before they won the Cup, Barry Trotz was in trouble. And there was a chance, there was talk he was going to be fired. I think it was the year before they won. And Ovi was one of the guys who stood up for him and said, don't do it. So, you know, like, he tries to respect the chain of command. He's a great player who should be able to flex his muscles internally time to time. But I think he really does try to make it work with the coaches. And Laviolette was pretty excited after he talked to him.
It's very interesting, and we all know this, these types of personalities, and we've talked about it, I think, with you in the past, Shea Weber, who we got to know very, very well here, and you could sit there and talk to Shea about fantasy football and baseball and dogs and all kinds of subject matters with no microphone or no camera around, and he would talk to you till you wanted to stop. But the minute you turned something on and you started talking hockey, it became a very, very short conversation, and it was just, you know, we always felt like, you know, the fans, people got cheated because Shea has a great personality, but it was very hard to see in the public's eye because he would kind of shut down, you know, when he was doing interviews. So they never got a chance to really see it. Peter Laviolette is the same way. We got one, and I don't know, Willie may rebut that. These guys may refute this, but I kind of feel like we got one really, really good interview. Every year we would do the show at training camp. Season hasn't started. It's camp. Everybody's coming in from the offseason. And Peter would come over to our table. We're doing it right there at Centennial Sportsplex. And he would sit down, and he would be as loose and as fun and as engaging as he would be. And that would be basically it. And then any other time that we talked to him. Yeah. Then any time else we talked to him, it was on, game on, and it was basically shutdown mode. It was game mode, and you never were going to get an interview like we got in training camp. So I felt like we got one really, really good personable interview a year in his 5 years here.
You know, it's interesting because some people in our business, they get upset by that, and I get it. But, like, one of the things I've learned as I've gotten older, and I'm like a geezer now, is that you have to accept people for who they are as long as they're not hurting anyone. Like, not everybody is outgoing. Not everybody is gregarious. Some people, their place of work is their place of work. Like, when they're there to work. And, you know, do I wish that at times guys like Laviolette would open up and tell us more stories? Yeah, I do. But I don't think it's any reason to be negative on them or dislike them or say bad things about them because they view it as differently than we do. Now, I don't, like, sometimes, I'll say this, I've had a great relationship over the years with John Tortorella, but we don't deal with each other every day. I suspect if we did, we might want to kill each other. And I don't like what he did I didn't like what he did this year at the end of the playoffs. But I think people can disagree. But I understand that that's who he is. That's the way he is. He's successful at it. His approach has worked. And I have to accept that But I do think at times you have to be willing to say, hey, there's a limit. And I think both sides have to understand it.
Talking to Elliot Friedman, Hockey Night in Canada, sportsnet.ca. The 31 thoughts are out there. They're fresh. You can read them right now. And Elliot, as I read about the maneuverings of Bill Guerin, the GM for the Minnesota Wild, I'm really curious, what is next for Kevin Fiala? I believe he's a restricted free agent. They want to, I know, lock him up, but he's an interesting one, right? I think we all here are really curious to see what he ends up signing for there.
I think it's going to, and also I think he's changing agents. I've heard a rumor like he's changed agents and is a Newport guy now. So that always adds another layer. Anytime someone changes agents, it usually means that, you know, there's going to be a different tack coming. So that's always adds to the conversation.
He had the former player, didn't he? We used to talk to him about this. Who did he have?
Was he Jared Bouquet, Kevin App? Was he one of those guys?
No, I think.
Oh, wait, no.
No, he was the former.
Was he Claude Lemieux?
Yes, that's who he was. Yes, Claude Lemieux. Yes.
So I think it's switched now. I've heard it's switched. Now, I mean, you guys know Fiala. He's a confident guy.
Oh,
yes. He ain't coming in low.
No.
Right.
He's not lacking confidence.
And he had a good year this year. Rough start, strong finish. It's up to him, you know. I have a feeling, they're going to be prepared for a tough negotiation there.
Are you a believer, contract aside, that he will blossom?
Yeah.
Because this is one where the day of the trade, I think everybody was excited to get. Because, I mean, just being completely open about it, I think the Predators had really gotten weary of his youth, his immaturity, some of the mistakes he would make. They thought they had been patient enough, and they just didn't feel like they could win it with him. They liked the security of Granlund. But now here we are, fast forward a couple years. Granlund is not coming back, it doesn't look like. And now Fiala looks like he could be blossoming the way that the Predators always hoped he would.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is, the tough thing for me on this one, guys, is I'm not a guy who looks into the past a lot. My general opinion is things happen, okay. Something like David Poile's been your GM there for, 21 years? He's made a lot of good moves, and he's going to make bad ones. Like, anybody who's a GM for that long, you're going to have ones, you're going to have the one like Forsberg where you hit, a fifth-deck grand slam, and you're going to have other ones where they're not, maybe don't work. Like, the one thing I understood at the time was you guys were trying to win. And I think at the time, Granlund gave you a better chance to win than Fiala did. I completely understood why you guys made that deal. Like, you guys are there. Am I wrong?
Not at all.
Nope.
Yeah. I think they had become, I think, completely exasperated by Fiala's enigmatic, whatever adjective you want to put next to it, that you just didn't know what you were going to get every night.
Well, and I think at the time they couldn't afford that. Like, you guys had a chance to win the Stanley Cup. You had and in those moments you got to go for it. Now, I think what's interesting now is I think you guys are in a position now where you have to make some very, very difficult decisions. And I would suspect that Poile has made some calls out there on some of your core guys, not necessarily to trade them, but just to see, we're not talking about Josi, he's not going anywhere. But I wouldn't be surprised some of your top forwards, just to see what can I get for them? What's the market for them? I think he's going to try and change your mix. So if Fiala and Granlund, if that deal was on the table right now, I'm not sure you'd make it. But at the time, you do it and you try to win it all.
I completely agree. I think most people at the time would have 100% gone along with that. Elliot, do you think Barry Trotz has got one more rabbit to pull out of the hat? Do you think they can force a game seven?
Well, I mean, when Point doesn't play, Tampa has lost two games. I mean, he's a pretty valuable guy.
Yes.
And the tracking that they have now, Barzal had the puck on his stick the most in the series the other night when he wasn't playing against Point. So, I mean, it's tough enough to go through Hedman when you have to go through both Point and Hedman that's very difficult. You know, I'll tell you this, though. Like, Tampa dominated that last game. Like, that was Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope circa 1970.
I didn't think the Islanders were ever going to get a shot. It was just like, we're going to play all night until we get that one shot. And that's kind of what they, have, like 20 shots through the end of the first overtime or something. It was ridiculous.
Well, I think through the end of the first overtime, we counted that we keep a stat called slot shots, which is exactly what it says. And through the first 60 minutes, they had four. I think the winner was their fifth.
Wow.
Like, that is an exceedingly low total. And I just don't think you can do that. Like, Vancouver tried that with Vegas, and, you know, it worked for two games, and then they lost game seven. So I guess it can work twice. I don't know. I like Tampa to wrap it up tonight.
Do we think Point will play? Or game time decision, I guess, is what they're throwing out there? But he's hurting, though, right? I mean, he's been hurting for a while.
You know what the bigger concern is, guys, is that every time he tries to play, it looks like he aggravates it, right? So this is something there. At some point in time, it's either going to be, can he manage the pain versus can he make it worse? That's what we're going to get to.
Elliot Friedman is with us from Sportsnet, joins us every Thursday at 1 o'clock. One question that I have had, and then I know you've kind of hit it in your 31 thoughts, but with the you know, condensed offseason that we're going to have once the Stanley Cup has been awarded, and there's not really that legal tampering period for free agency, do you think we'll see more trades of rights of teams trying to get their guy before free agency even opens, that you could have more movement of draft picks to try and get some of those guys locked up before they even hit free agency?
Well, like Montreal did it, right? And
right.
And as you mentioned, there's no more free agency period, as you mentioned, and there's also no more you can't make a trade for a conditional pick. Like, if, like, say the Predators wanted to trade for an unrestricted, like, say the Pairs wanted to trade for Alex Pietrangelo. You can't say, okay, we're trading for him and we're giving up a third round pick contingent on us signing him. You can't do that anymore. That's out. The players didn't like that, so they took it out. So basically, Montreal had 14 picks, I think, this year, and they risked a late one on the chance that they could sign him. And that's what they did. And it's a fifth rounder, which is, I think, a price you'd pay if you really believe a guy's going to play for you for 4 years. So I do think the fact that Montreal did it is going to get other people to consider doing it, but I think it's only going to be late round picks. Like, nobody's doing it for, I don't think, anything higher than like a fourth rounder. But I do think other teams will try it. Yes.
And then I thought this was interesting. Your 24th point that
I can't even remember them all.
Well, this was Marc-Andre Fleury and what could happen in Vegas that, you know, they're probably not going to buy him out. But you said, would anyone really be surprised to see Marc-Andre Fleury and Tristan Jarry in Pittsburgh?
Well, I think, like obviously Vegas is not coming back with the two of those guys. Fleury makes $7 million against the cap. And if you believe what Leonard's going to sign, it's 5 times 5, right? So you're not putting $12 million in goal, especially since they already are tight to the cap. So they're either going to try to trade Fleury or they're going to buy him out. Now, I have heard the buying him out is 4 years, a little over $10 million. So it's like about 2.5 per season. I don't think Vegas wants to do that. Like, I think a lot of teams aren't crazy about that with the limits on cash flows now that people have because of the way the world is. They're going to try and trade him first. I don't think Pittsburgh can do it if it's a trade, because the most that Vegas can eat is $3.5 million, and I just don't know if Pittsburgh is going to be able to do that. But if they do buy him out and Fleury wants to go somewhere for a reasonably low number just because he's happy and he'll play, would anybody be shocked if he ends up back there?
No.
Nope.
They're looking for a goalie. I mean, they have to trade Murray first, but they're looking for another goalie, and we know he loves it there, and they love him.
Man, I would love to be in a position to get a lot of buyout contracts. Man, I'd love to be bought out like several times over. That'd be great. That's a pretty good business to be in.
You need a better lawyer.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's true. Chase, do you have anything else, or do we need to let Elliot go?
I'm good.
Our 31 thoughts are done with Elliot. Elliot, really appreciate it as always. Continue the good work and be safe. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet. 31 Thoughts, 31 Thoughts Podcast, which will be out today with former Predators head coach Peter Laviolette. There's news on the college basketball front. We'll come back and head over to the campus. Belmont, we'll talk to Casey Alexander next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. That is the plan. College basketball season. We're going to get into all that and more with our Chicago Cubs expert. He's our analyst. He'll break down the Chicago Cubs. Actually, he's here to talk about his Belmont basketball team. Casey Alexander is on the line with us. Casey, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. What's
new
and exciting?
Yeah, like the OVC, the ex-OVC pitcher, Alec Mills, getting the no-hitter for the Cubs, huh? That's a good story.
How about that? Yeah, big time. Big time. UT Martin guy, Clarksville, right?
Yeah.
A walk-on at UT Martin. Don't you just love those stories?
I heard the story about him just driving by the field one day, watching him practice, and said, I could do that. And he went and met with the coach the next day, and here we are.
Unreal.
Isn't that crazy? By the way, what is your – we were talking about this a while back because I watched an E60 piece on ESPN about Ja Morant's story of how he was discovered in the back gym when all the main gym was where all the scouts and college basketball coaches were. And, a guy from Murray wanders back there and finds Ja Morant in a back gym. You have any story like that where you found a kid off the beaten path?
There's everybody's got stories like that. I think it's a little bit, I don't think you're getting the full story because in most of those events, you got a main gym and a back gym and the best teams could be playing in either. But still, I mean, obviously an unbelievable find and, congrats to Murray for getting it done.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I don't think you, I guess it always helps. I don't think there's these places, they're littered with Ja Morant stories, but
it's not like they picked teams and they said, okay, all the best players go in here and then you other guys go into the back gym and maybe somebody will find you. No, they just happened to be where they were playing that day, I guess.
Well, he and his dad, they always said he was never a big recruiter. In fact, he wasn't getting recruited at all. It was all about his size. How careful do you have to be? You've been in this business a long time, and everybody's kind of got like the book of what you're looking for in players, right? Whether it's a position or what you're looking for. But sometimes there are just certain kids that don't fit the mold, right? And you have to figure that out. Like, it's not in the manual. Like, it doesn't make any sense why you would be interested in them. But when they ended up on your team, you're so glad you did because it doesn't make sense. But once they get there, it makes total sense.
Absolutely. And then, let's be real. A lot of times we just get lucky. Yeah, I mean, you see something in a player and you project out, okay, what's his potential or, physically when he develops, what's he going to be able to do? So you got to make your best guess on those things. But, the John Morants of the world, the Dylan Windlers, the Garrison Matthews, those guys, they just deserve a lot of credit for getting good. And the coaches deserve very little.
Well, the last 6-plus months we've been talking to you off and on. I don't think the picture was very clear of what the heck you were in for this upcoming season. Do you believe now as we sit here today in mid-September the picture is becoming much more clear of your season?
Much more clear. Obviously having a starting date, and then being able to make all the decisions that goes along with that, is creates a lot of peace of mind for coaches. It lets administrators start planning things. But there's still plenty to be done. I mean, I think schedules are really going to be a windy road, and non-conference schedules I'm talking about, what happens over the next week, 10 days, 2 weeks. So there's still a lot to figure out. And then, there's the testing piece that I think all of us are still a little bit worried about, maybe. Everything that's been done so far is with the assumption that testing is going to get easier, cheaper, more available, things like that. You know, but when that happens is going to determine, really, are we going to be able to start on the 25th? You know, will conferences start making their own decisions about conference only, things like that. So there's still more to be determined, but we're way better off today than we were yesterday.
Talking to Casey Alexander, Belmont men's basketball coach. So, Casey, let's start with the OVC. What have the conversations been like there? Are we fairly confident that at least for conference games, you can get close to the amount of games that you want to get within the league?
I think every league across the country is planning to play their full slot of conference games. So really the question is do you expand that even more? For example, the OVC, we have an 18-game conference schedule, and we play everybody twice with the exception of four teams. So part of our conversations could be, okay, for this year, do we want to play 22 conference games? Therefore, kind of guarantee ourselves that we're going to have those games as best we can. Or do we keep it like it is and play more non-conference games? Those are discussions for every league all across the country. You know, and then we also, you guys know, I mean, you know, it's pretty foolish to think we're just going to play all our games and nobody's going to have to postpone, nobody's going to have, you know, to reschedule. And so how much room do you build into your schedule in order to plan for that is another question.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of ideas kicked around, Casey, and I know in the OVC you have sort of a traveling partner that you go around and play a pair of road games. I saw some ideas of would you all, you know, go to one gym, maybe four teams to one area and play sort of a round robin there. Right now is the plan to just do the regular schedule? Because as you said, there's going to be hurdles. We've seen what baseball has gone through. You know, there's some things that can cause some hiccups for sure.
Right, yeah. For us, I mean, we're very fortunate in the OVC because we're a bus league. You know, so just playing in-home gyms is a lot more doable than, let's say, you know, the league with Middle Tennessee and Western Kentucky where they're traveling all across the country to play their games. You know, it would make more sense for them to have a weekend where they bring in three or four teams and you play two or three games because it really minimizes travel and risk for their teams. But for us, I think our plan would be play the games as scheduled. You know, if you need to adapt later in the season to get two or three games in over the course of a weekend, then, you know, then you have one of those formats like you're talking about where, you know, a little bit more of a bubble kind of a situation.
So what else with the discussions? I read a lot of articles about behind the scenes, and I guess you have to say this committee that had to sift through all of the chaos that was going on did a pretty good job of taking their time, not making any hasty decisions, but, you know, coming to this conclusion that you're going to have the season. So anything else that jumped out at you in terms of what they came out with yesterday?
Nothing at all that came out yesterday. I think it's basically what most coaches were, you know, were ready to hear. And the question for yesterday for us was more, is it going to be November 21st or 25th? And they answered that by saying the 25th. And so that news was pretty status quo. I think the, you know, Dr. Handline with the NCAA, chief medical guy. I mean, you know, you can't have a meeting about any of this stuff without it being made kind of painfully clear that health and safety of student athletes is the number one priority. And those decisions are still being made. You know, they haven't prescribed for us what testing protocol has to look like. How many times do you have to get tested? Where? When? You know, and that's when schools and conferences will have to decide, can we do that or not? It's exactly what happened in football. Some of those leagues just decided we can't test everybody every day like the Power Five does. We're not ready for that. So we're going to have to cancel the fall. We'll play our games in the spring. Hopefully it'll be cheaper, easier. You know, so we still have those kinds of discussions. I'm not trying to plant a seed that they're going to wipe away basketball season, but it's probably going to be somewhere in the middle. It's not going to be just as easy as, hey, we got a game, so show up and play.
I was reading an article in The Athletic with Seth Davis, and you were quoted in it. And so I guess strong mid-major programs like yourself, we always can think back through all the games you guys have played against some Power Five leagues and gotten some big wins that get everybody's attention. It's a wait and see, I guess, to see how many of those, if any, you could get in there as you try to put your schedule together.
Yeah, and that's the biggest, I think, domino, the one that's going to fall the quickest. Now that we know when the games start, you know, all of the typical early season events that everybody loves, the Maui Classic, the Champions Classic. We're playing in the Orlando Invitational, which is a real high-profile event with a great field. Everybody wants to protect those events, and they will be protected. But, you know, you move an 18 tournament 2 weeks later than when it was supposed to be played. Well, now whatever games were supposed to be played during that stretch have to be rescheduled or canceled or moved, you know. So it's just going to be a really, really big puzzle to put together over the next few weeks for non-conference scheduling. You know, the NCAA needs as much data as they can get in order to decide how do we really separate one team from the other. So protecting non-conference is important, especially for us if we're talking about, you know, a potential two-bid league for the OVC.
Right. And so how does it work? As you mentioned, you have those tournaments that everybody's been planning on playing. Then you have your conference games. But as far as the non-conference, is it even worth looking at the schedule you had planned, or is everybody having to just scrap that and start over with that type of thing?
Yeah, that's where the uncertainty lies right now. I think it would be, you know, we would all be in favor of, it makes too much sense to say, okay, just pick up on November 25th and play the rest of your schedule. Don't worry about those games you lost. But it's not that simple because they are going to play these tournaments and they're going to move these tournaments around. There's going to be bubbles pop up of four teams, 18, 16 teams that, you know, 2 weeks ago these bubbles weren't even in existence. But schools are going to clamor to get there so that they know they've got some games, and that's going to be disruptive. Without a doubt, there's going to be some conferences that choose to play conference only, or they might be like the OVC is considering, and they add conference games. So I think everybody's going to start with what they have and try to preserve it. But at the same time, everybody is going to know that you got to be ready to adjust because, you know, it's almost certain that you're going to have to make some changes.
Casey Alexander is with us, the head coach at Belmont. Just on that real quick, if you guys, for instance, aren't able to play, you know, some of the out-of-conference games that you might, I mean, don't you think that's there's something that's going to be missing because of that, because of the different competition that you get by playing some of those other teams?
Yeah, and that's, you know, you're trying to give your team and your student-athletes the best experience you can, you know, and some of that is, you know, involves playing teams from other leagues. We're supposed to play at USC, Southern Cal, in December. That was going to be a great trip for us out west, play a Pac-12 team, you know, but they're not even right now. They're not even playing games until January 1st. So we've already lost that one. We were supposed to open our season up in Pittsburgh at Duquesne, a really good Atlantic 10 team that has high expectations. Well, season doesn't start till the 25th. So are we going to be able to reschedule that one or not? And every team has to, you know, has got this same dilemma, same questions that they have to get answered.
What about the Battle of the Boulevard? Is that still going to happen as usual, or is it going to be moved, or do you not know yet?
Well, that's a good question, too. Yeah, we were scheduled to play twice, as always. The first game was November 19th, I think, and that was supposed to be at Belmont. So that one either has to be canceled or it has to be rescheduled later. But therein lies the problem. So if we choose to preserve that game and schedule it later in the season, well, that probably means we got to cancel the game with somebody else. If we cancel that game with somebody else, that means they got to go find a game. They got to cancel a game with somebody else. So it's just, you know, it's a big mess is what it is.
You brought up the bubbles earlier and that, you know, there could be different bubbles that pop up. And we've seen it work in the pro sports. And you would assume that it's going to be – you'd be able to work just as effectively with college. But have you made calls? Have you talked to some people maybe in the NBA that you may know that have been a part of this or were part of the planning just to learn a little bit more?
I mean, I haven't personally made any calls, but there are more conversations than you would want to be a part of about the potential for having these bubbles all across the country. There's one specifically being talked about in Nashville that'll involve 16 teams. And I think, you know, chances are it's probably going to be played. So, but no, not one of those 16 teams had planned for that, you know. So
right.
If they choose to do that now, again, you can see kind of how it – just the trickle-down effect from something like that being decided. And the bubble doesn't get you any more games. It's just a little bit more of a guarantee that you're going to play them, you know, because of testing and quarantine. And, you know, the way the bubble will work is, okay, all 16 teams come to Nashville. They test before they come. They test when they get here. They quarantine for a couple of days. pledge allegiance not to go anywhere, anytime, do anything, you know, and therefore they're going to play those four games.
Casey, I've said the word bubble more in the last 6 months than I think I ever had.
Usually we're talking about teams trying to get in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah,
we're talking
right.
about the bubble.
Right. It's, and for, you know, for the common listener, the bubble simply means this. We're going to play a tournament, but we're going to test you and we're going to make you isolate yourself basically so that once you test negative, you know, we don't have to worry about that anymore and everybody will do that and therefore we'll get to play the games. It's really, bubble means testing in this case.
Well, bubble right now has meant safe because in the NHL and the NBA, it has been a foolproof system that has gone off without a hitch. I mean, they've come up with goose eggs since they've gotten into their bubbles. It's worked.
No, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, there's even been conversations. I think they've died down a little bit now. But, you know, do you play all your non-conference games in a bubble or all of your conference games in a bubble? You know, mm-hmm. you do it over a 3-4 week period.
Yeah.
And it sounds great on paper, but, you know, the cost for that
sure.
is astronomically high. There just aren't many schools that can do that. Not to mention you're talking about students who still have class during that whole time that they're supposed to be in the bubble. And, you know, so it's a lot more it's a lot more difficult than it sounds.
Yeah, a little bit more hoops on your end to jump through.
Yeah, no doubt about it, yeah.
See what I did there. Last yeah. thing, so what is your schedule right now with your team? Like, what do you know right now you can do here in mid-September?
It's you know, same as always in the off season. You get 4 hours a week with your team on the floor. They get 8 hours total, and that can be strength and conditioning or time on the floor. And so that's what we have right now. That goes.
When does that change?
It goes. Well, that was one of the changes that came from yesterday. It used to be 8 hours in the off season, and then when your official practice starts, you go to 20 hours per week, and you can use that 20 hours however you want. Now, on September 21st, next week, I guess, from there until the time your official practice starts, you get 12 hours. So they're kind of – and that's a nice change. That gives us more access, but it's not full in season where, you know, where guys have 12 weeks of preseason practice. And so it's a nice little intermediate step for us all.
Well, that starts on Monday. Great. Hey, thanks for doing this. Always good to talk to you. Seems like some good news on your end. Continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
See you guys. I always enjoy it. Thank you.
Yep. Casey Alexander, Belmont basketball coach, back to wrap up the show next. Woo! Action-packed show again today.
Been fun.
I think we covered it all. We hit
I think
it all.
We've hit it all. It's a good way of putting it. What ground have we not covered today?
Well, let's see. Paul Feinbaum.
Well, it even started before that with local news here concerning Metro Nashville.
Yeah.
The bars and restaurants, the Titans attendance.
That was fresh stuff right off the bat.
Football next Friday
in the Metro schools. Nashville. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Then Paul Feinbaum. He'll join us every week. Floyd Reese, Jonnu Smith, Underdog Picks, Elliot Friedman, and then Casey Alexander on the brand new plan for college basketball. I think we were all curious what the heck college basketball was going to do behind the scenes while all this was going on. Would they be able to play? Interesting. But can you imagine the jigsaw puzzle?
By the way,
can you imagine the – yeah, that was interesting. Can you imagine the jigsaw puzzle trying to put your non-conference schedule together? Now it's going to be very, very tricky.
It's going to be like a game of Jenga. You think you'll have it done, and then one piece will get removed, and the whole thing falls apart.
What if everybody just says, hey, we're playing in our conference, thanks, but no thanks, and Lipscomb and Belmont play a 7-game series in December? Every non-conference game is Belmont versus Lipscomb.
Well, I will say this.
That wouldn't be all bad, would it?
I've been looking, seeing stuff on Twitter today, you know, since the Big Ten came out yesterday. Now the Pac-12 seems to be assembling in their, you know, Wonder Twin Powers activate, and who knows what they're about to do. But I've seen other conferences or schools coming out and saying, yeah, well, I think we're maybe about to get things ramped up here. So it may not just be the Big Ten with 14 teams. that are kind of targeting.
Mac attack? You're talking about the Mac attack?
I did see some things with Steinbrecher. Yeah,
some
and
rumblings.
Mac.
Some rumblings.
Uh-huh.
Maxion? Are we going to have some action?
Could be some action, which definitely would impact the underdogs. That would impact the underdogs.
Some rumbling about some action.
If we get Maxion and Pac-12 after dark, pumping into my veins. Let's go.
I also saw like Hawaii and some Mountain West teams, I think, saying, you know, whether they come back or not, we may just start playing. So I don't know. It's been the wild, wild west, but it's – now it's back to the wild, wild west again, right? It's like everybody's just to each his own. They're going to take care of themselves. Doesn't seem like anybody's leading this thing. So,
well, I mean,
fine.
That's how they're going to get stuff done.
Yep.
I think there's a little bit of a blank you, Jobu. I do it myself.
Yeah, I think you're right. Don't drink Jobu's rum, though. It's very bad.
No.
We've had a major league reference. We've had a dodgeball reference today. What other movies have we hit?
I don't think we've had too many. I think that's about it, right?
I guess that's it.
Yeah. By the way, MTSU hosting their game against Troy in Murfreesboro this weekend with fans.
Yep. Yeah, I saw that. And Middle A. I looked at Middle for silly underdogs because they're a 3.5-point home dog. But I did.
I had them on my list.
Yep.
It's a 3:00 kick.
But I haven't had
much luck. In fact, it'll be on ESPN2, by the way. I think that's right.
Cool. I think you're right, yeah. When I was looking at that earlier. So, yeah, it'll be cool to see how it works with fans. And Chris Massaro is going to go on with Robbie and Joe tomorrow to talk more about that process. So, going to be cool.
I don't think I've seen the number. What are they allowing in? Have you seen it?
I haven't, but I can look it up real quick. But yeah, I don't know.
I don't think I've seen a definitive number. If they've even put one out, I don't even know.
I'll give you another little nugget while Chase is looking it up. You know, I've been telling my own story about our family, right? And my daughter, Evie, is a senior goalie. Yeah, we were very concerned about the season. They will play their first games next week.
Outstanding.
Yeah. So their school, university school, had been very cautious, understandably. But being in Metro Nashville, they were sort of in lockstep with the Metro schools for a while. But they took their time. They did the research, and they're game on next week. So better late than never. We're on board and ready to roll.
Excellent.
So there will be a senior season in the Donick House. We're excited about that.
Good news.
Roughly 7,000 people with 1,000 seats reserved for students.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. That will do it for us. We will end on that note. You have a great rest of your Thursday. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning to wrap up the week, and it'll be another fast-moving show tomorrow. We'll see you at 10 a.m.
Time, turn all of the lights on over every boy and every